Yeah, time to get into it. Pet Chat on 2NURFM with this cracking group of young or youngish professionals.
Thank you.
Oh,
thank you.
Isn't that wonderful? Oh,
that's the best news I've heard all day.
See, that's how we roll here. Dr. Tavor Tabbert, who's fresh back from another junket. Good afternoon.
I've junketed it all.
You did say, well, what you do in your own time is of no concern to this office. But you did, what, 5 speeches in 3 days?
Oh, look, I'm very important, Mark. Yeah, okay. So, or someone just hands me a microphone.
would the gang at the surgery have that similar view?
Of me, yes. Oh, absolutely. Of course, I pay them to say that.
Oh, there we go. Of course they do. And Cheryl Shaw, who pays herself, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Now, Cheryl, you've got a brooch on. We always have to check that out. And yep. It is a lady with some long hair just cascading in the wind.
It is just a reflection on Monday's weather. So I thought we might talk about our pets and the effect that the wind can have on some of them.
Dr. David Tabbert is here, working away for his next conference that he'll be speaking at, fresh back from the Gold Coast. Cheryl, we never got an invo to that.
No, just as well. He wouldn't have had time to speak with us.
Port Macquarie, I haven't told you that one. We were up there last weekend doing more seminars.
Right.
But this is your time, Cheryl.
I went to the zoo at Port 2 weeks ago.
Oh, lovely.
Lovely little zoo.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed it.
There we go. Well, while we're all skipping around the country, we did have some pretty wild weather, Cheryl, here in the Hunter on Monday. And what do you think effect that would have had on our dogs?
Oh, look, not only does it affect dogs, small children and even some adults are affected by the wind. And now we're into August. August is traditionally the month that the wind arrives in Newcastle. So just to be prepared for a little bit of what you can expect from your dogs, some dogs really react very, very negatively to the windy weather. And it's a response because one of the things that they get really concerned about is the survival. When things are not going right, dogs really panic about survival. And it's a sensory perception. What happens, especially with puppies, any change of behaviour, if there's changes, their behaviour will alter. And sometimes we find that dogs will start barking when it's windy. They'll become quite active and sort of a little bit agitated and excited and even a little bit on the wild side. They just you just can't predict what they're going to be. And the reason is because when the wind blows, smells or scents that are in the air are being sort of all squished together.
Is that what it is?
It's swishing it together and it's not coming from one direction. So dogs are very one-directional about smell. So they take in the odours and are aware of where they're coming from and what it could be. But when this air is swishing around and it's bringing different odours from all over the place, it is really, really confusing for the dogs. They'll become unsettled, overexcited, and because they can't defer where that smell is coming from, they really do start to change their behaviour. Some will get the zoomies and just spin around, running around, and small children do that too. They'll run really silly, and this can be a problem, particularly say if your gate blows open, a word of caution.
Yes.
A dog gets the runs, it'll just start running and running and running because they're usually scared, and when they run like that, obviously accidents can happen. So just always check before you let your dog out if it has been windy to make sure that your gate's clipped. Now, another thing that reacts, why the dogs react, is the sounds. The increased noise that from, trees, from things just rattling outside, and these sounds are amplified in the wind. So dogs have such acute hearing anyway. When they hear these things, they can, again, get quite scared. Some dogs will actually hide. Some dogs will run and sort of go under beds and things. And if that happens, leave them there. Mm. Let them be under the bed. Or if they go into their crate, leave them. That's where they're going for their safe space. So it's important to understand that they can become hyper alert and very nervous. And, if they're sort of coping by going under a bed, it's exactly okay. The other thing is the physical sensation of what the dogs feel. If we think about a border collie, border collies don't like air movement around their ears. And so if you've got a border collie outside who's, sort of normally happy to be outside, he might start barking and, running the fence line and things like that. So it's important to understand that some dogs just don't like that sensation. There's other dogs like your Arctic breeds, your Siberian Huskies and your Volhounds, things, Swedish Volhounds, things like that. They love that, breeze blowing on them, particularly if it's cold, they get super, super vigilant. It's like, oh, wow, this is great. It's cold. I really like this. So you've got to sort of think about what your dog's all about and understand if the dog is acting up and if it's being different, it's because the wind is really affecting it. But there's things we can do at home. If your dog is a little bit scared, and it may be one of those dogs that's, you know, clinging to your leg because it just wants to be by your side because it's scared, don't take that dog on a walk that day. If it's windy, just do some activities at home, maybe play inside, give them a licky mat or something else, a Kong, because you don't want to overstimulate them and make them even more vulnerable. The other thing is when dogs are outside, say at the park, often they can't read or can't communicate properly with other dogs because the hair will be blowing and the dog may look like it's being aggressive, but okay. it's not. So you know how if a dog's got its hackles up, what people call the hackles up, a dog will read that as interpreting that dog's not, you know, worth going near. But when the wind is blowing, sometimes that can make another dog think, oh, gee whiz, that dog's not so friendly and, you know, we can have issues in the park. Mm. So quite often avoiding the park. The other thing is when dogs are being reactive like that, it's much better to avoid the park and just take them on a walk on their leash so that they're not being too revved up by what's happening with the air around them. And, I would always recommend in windy days, dog on leash, not off leash.
A lot of this is, as you've been intimating, Cheryl, is nuanced breed by breed.
It can be, yes, exactly, because you've got some dogs that really do enjoy the wind in their ears. Mm. You know, you'll have dogs that put their head out the window because they enjoy that air on their face. Other dogs are quite opposed to it and will go quite low in the car. So you've got different, like the Arctic breeds, they love that cold wind. That makes them feel really at home. They love it. And, you know, you think about the Huskies. I had puppy preschool last night and one of the puppies in class is actually a Siberian Husky, and her mother was saying, you know, on Monday the dog was horrendous. It was playing in water bowls and taking its toy into the water bowls, having such a great time but not settling, zoomies all day long, and, you know, was really tired at the end of the day. So it does have an impact. There is a very physical thing that can happen to some dogs to make them feel uneasy.
From Shortland, Ben, you're looking to know if it's safer to restrain your dog while driving. So what's happening, Ben?
Hi, I'm Ben. I'm from Shortland. I was wondering what we'd be better off, because I've got a dog called Jasper and we take him in the car around Newcastle and everywhere. But every now and then, I don't know whether it's better to keep him chained on in the car while we're driving or let him just sit at the back seat with the window down and just looking outside the window while the wind's blowing.
What sort of dog are you talking? Is Jasper, Ben?
It's a mixture.
Like a Chihuahua mixture or a cattle dog mixture?
Cattle dog mixture.
Yeah, yep. And traditionally, you know, they like to be, they're alert, they're very active, they're interested in their environment. And as Cheryl was just saying, a lot of these dogs love to get the wind in their ears and keep, you know, up to date with what's going on outside. Look, always better to restrain dogs. The question is how you do that. And I just reflect on, I remember when I was a relatively new vet back in the early 90s, every Friday we would see a dog with a broken leg, almost by clockwork. And that's dogs that were basically unrestrained in the back of cars or they were running on the road. And the ones that were unrestrained, what I've noticed is over the years, we've seen people, you know, looking after their dogs in better environments, obviously, but also keeping them restrained in different ways. And there are laws associated with restraining dogs. So dogs will always do better. We've got to also consider the risk of accidents. If you're driving and there is any sort of hesitancy or hit the brakes hard and your dog projectiles through the car, that's going to be just as dangerous to anyone, even if you're in a seatbelt, obviously. So you can get different types of restraints, and some of them are more restrictive than others. There's ones that connect to the seatbelts and clip in, and that's very good. And, you know, the harness style, usually they kind of are in that harness style, and that provides the best protection. But it can also be that whilst you've got them restrained, they're actually still able to, you know, sit and have their head out the window, etc., or move around a little bit. They're not completely strapped in. So I would just say be sensible with, you know, your dog, and have a look at some of those commercial setups, because they can actually, you know, keep the dog well restrained but still have a little bit of freedom as well.
Yeah,
Cheryl.
And David, another thing on that, and it's worth considering, Ben, is that dogs that do put their head out the window actually can have injuries from particles in the air entering into their eyes, and they can get ocular damage. So
yes, seen that.
My advice would always be to try and keep them restrained in the car totally. You can have your window down, but certainly not allowing them to have their head outside the window.
No, I would. Yeah, just so they can put their nose up.
Yep.
I've seen eye injuries, and I've seen dogs that aren't restrained get thrown from vehicles.
Yes.
And present with all sorts of injuries. So always better to have them clipped in when you travel, and better in the back seat.
Ben, hope that helps you out, all right?
Thank you very much to both of you guys, and keep up the great work with vetting and everything else.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, Ben.
Good afternoon, Bruce. What's happening with the stray cats? Some good news, I believe.
Yes, Mark. How are you?
Yeah, what's happening with the stray cat, Bruce? We're fighting fit as we're ever going to get.
Mate, I had a stray cat a couple of weeks ago that turned up at my place, and I took it down to the local vet, and I was very fortunate that she had been microchipped.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, and I left the cat there. Apparently they contacted the owner, and she contacted me on the Saturday night, a couple of days later, and the cat was back home very safely, and she just rang up to thank me for looking after her.
Good on you, mate. All right. That is a great story, because obviously a couple of things, right? Bruce knew what to do and took the cat in to get it checked, and
it's
the owner's
reunited. Yeah.
Yeah, but also the owner has also kept the details up to date. There's so many times that, you know, on the other side, we look at microchip details and they're no longer the owner. We ring people and they say, oh, we sold that dog, cat, you know,
right,
7 years ago or whatever, gave it away. And so people have to keep their details updated. Yeah. And so,
change phone numbers or something. It's not my phone number anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, when it all comes right, that's when we're very happy.
Well, what do you reckon your hit rate is on this, David, with people bring animals in? What is the rough percentage?
Oh, look, it's not too bad, but the problem is when you get into those circumstances, they're not microchipped or the microchip details are out of date, you end up spending hours and hours trying to chase down any kind of contact, and it's really, really difficult to find. So it could be about a 20% miss rate, but it's the 20% just occupy so much trouble. So big lesson, and I'm sure Bruce would back it up, is, you know, everybody make sure your pet's microchipped and keep your details up to date.
Yeah, and is that 1-2-step process? If you move, make sure the info moves across with you. And Nicole from Karua, you are with us as well. G'day, Nicole. You're going to stick with the concept of microchipping. What's your question there?
Hi, I have a question with the microchipping in the way of, I know you can go to the New South Wales Pet Registry and register your pet that way with your address, but if the dog or a cat gets to a different vet out of your area and you've been to your vet with the pet that's been scanned with the microchip in their database, is there a standard database that will say that dog goes to that vet and that's its address?
It'll have your contact details. So, yeah, you're correct. The first time is that we, when we scan them, we're actually going to look on the New South Wales Pet Registry. And that those details then, or the Companion Animal Registry, I think, those details will be, it doesn't matter which vet you go to, or there are also, council officers will scan them, and there's a few other people who have access to the database. So in that case, they're all looking at the same place, and so it will have your details, or at least your most recent up-to-date address and contact number as well, and any other notes regarding your pet. So it's not an issue of being held those details in any one vet hospital, although they're often recorded. But the correct thing is that the registration of pets in New South Wales means they have to be recorded in the central database.
Okay, thank you.
Good question. Thanks.
Yeah, like you said, David, they're all in the one spot in that everyone has access to the whole thing.
Yep.
All right, let's move on. G'day, Paul at Floraville. You have an 11-year-old dog that's decided to take a liking to its fresh stools. What's going on?
I don't know. I just noticed that like the last 8 months or 6 months, he just been eating his own feces. Like,
yeah.
Not all of it. Just one or two, and maybe every couple of days. But yeah, I was just wondering why he's not. My young bloke reckons it's because he's not getting enough nutrients. But I said, well, he's the best fed dog in Floraville.
I know a few dogs in Floraville, and they're all well fed. So there you go. These days the dietary deficiencies that we might have attributed are pretty much largely gone. There are going to be the odd exception. Just because a lot of the time our diets that we provide, particularly if you're using, good quality dry dog food, is well-balanced, contains all the appropriate nutrients. The real problem is either behavioural in terms of a kind of a stress or an anxiety response, or the other thing is some sort of cognitive decline, kind of, I hesitate to use the word dementia, But it's been described in that way. But stress is normally the thing that really surfaces in sometimes some very strange ways. And I'd be more inclined to think that there's a stress response and that he's just doing that. So
I wouldn't sort of think that because he doesn't seem stressed out at all. He's like, he's got a big yard. I walk him every day.
Yeah, what stresses dogs is different to what stresses us.
Sometimes, Paul, some of the things we don't realise is if there's a new dog in the neighbourhood, maybe next door or two doors down or something, that can sometimes create a problem. And dogs will often eat their feces if they are stressed. They do that to try and clean their environment so that they're not sort of presenting as, oh, come over here and, we'll get together and have a bit of a blue. They're trying to keep everything nice and clean. And so it gets back to husbandry. You need to try as much as you can to clean up that dog feces as quickly.
I do, but I come back from where I come from home and...
Yeah.
I'm like,
exactly. But
he's so well fed, he can do two and three.
Yeah. But just have a think about what may be going on in the environment or things around him as well, because stress is usually an indicator of that feces eating.
It's still worthwhile maybe providing a degree of a fibre supplement just to alter it slightly. You might need to investigate.
Not every day.
That's the reason why I'm starting to think it's a stress response, because there's something else that's triggered it.
All right, thanks, Paul. Best of luck with everything there for you. G'day, Pam at Cessnock. What's going on with your pet there?
Yes, hi. I spoke to a doctor a couple of weeks or so ago about my little Japanese chin.
Yes.
And his bad ears.
Oh, okay.
The only way I can put it is that he's going downhill. He's 13 years old and, he's doing what the last dog is doing, not very often, but yes, he's started doing that.
Yep.
But he's eating a lot less, and in the morning when it's really cold, I pick him up and he's shivering and shaking, and I put him in bed with me, and all I can feel is bone.
His
underneath his hair, he's just bone.
I mean, they're little dogs to start with, aren't they?
Yes.
And you said about his ears, so I think it might have been one of Kimberly or Fiona,
It was you I spoke
was
to.
Was it?
How he was putting his ears back as if he couldn't hear properly. It started about 6 months ago, and he'd be outside and he'd put his ears back as if he was couldn't hear.
That's right. I spoke to you back in early April. I just checked my notes.
Since then he's now become like he's very, very thin. I pick him up and he's just all bone underneath his beautiful long coat. And I've noticed that he's wanting to come back to me, and he's sometimes very unsteady on his feet. And
I think I'm just reading my notes. Sorry, Pam, to interrupt, but I had written down that we were also considering whether he might have had some neurological disease that was coming out as inner ear disease, and it sounds like there's been some other things going on. So I'm wondering if you know, there's an extension of that problem in the process, and that's what's causing him now to be really poorly. Have you had him to the vet recently for a checkup?
No, I haven't. I'm staying out at Quarrabalong, and I don't have a car.
Oh, I see.
So I'm a little bit stuck at the moment. But I know he's reached a very good age for Japanese chins.
And, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, and he's he will go outside and he will run around and he will do his little jump and flips in the air that they're well known for. But yeah, he's just slowing.
A lot of our dogs, like, and you know, will start to slow down, and sometimes we kind of say, oh, this is an arthritic change and things like that. But also we do see dogs that as they get older, kind of like us, I guess, will have a kind of a collection of problems start to mount up. And so, you know, heart disease can be a thing, and neurological disease, which we were talking about, doesn't just affect those one senses. It actually starts to affect their movement, their behaviours, their demeanour, and also thinking that a lot of the hormones that are involved in regulation of things like body temperature that you mentioned before are coming from the brain as well. So I would be concerned that there's an ongoing brain process. And I think you might be in that difficult position of making a decision whether now's the time to let him go. And I think you probably need to get somehow to get to a vet and or get a vet to come to you to have a look at him and prescribe some medication for these times.
Best of luck, Pam. Pet Chat on 2NURFM. And we're heading to Nelson Bay. Shane, you've got a new dog and you've got an established dog. So we're talking a bit of how do you do, sir, kind of thing you want going on here.
Well, can you hear me all right? I'm just...
G'day.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, sorry. Mate, what I've got, we've got an established Staffy Jack Russell that we've had for 7 years.
Mm.
Lovely dog, spoiled riding, all that sort of thing. My daughter's come home from Sydney and she's got a purebred Staffy. There was a couple of questions. I didn't know how my dog would react if we took her dog and they both stayed with us, or her dog stayed with us. My dog's, he likes his own space. He likes his own house.
How old's your daughter's dog?
He's 9.
And 9-year-old male?
9-year-old male. Yeah.
Is he de-sexed?
No.
Okay. And what about your dog? How old?
He's 7. He's de-sexed. So we've had to put her dog in a kennel, and he's having some problems being in a kennel.
Mm.
So we feel bad about him being in a kennel, but we didn't know how two male dogs would coexist in the same house, especially mine. We don't want to put my dog in any under any stress.
It's not so much being the male dog, although that is a factor. The big factor is age and establishment.
Yeah.
I mean, if you bring a puppy in, they kind of, funnily enough, dogs will let puppies be puppies. But if you bring in a 9-year-old undersexed male to an established dog who's, is he inside the house, your dog?
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah. I'm just, and I understand the pressure that this creates, but I can't see a good outcome here. Now, I might be corrected by my behavioural vet colleagues. I'm sure that there's a process and you could do introductions, but, you know, from the other side as an emergency vet, I just think we're going to end up with some injuries.
Well, and then that brings us back to the my daughter's dog's having difficulty in the kennels. He's starting to pull the kennel apart. He just wants to be with people. That's what, you know, Stabby's like that.
Yeah.
David, is this really just a, I mean, sorry to be rude, is this kind of like an oil and water thing, ultimately?
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And the other pressure that you were saying, Shane, like the other dog being in the kennel as well, not a great environment when, you know, there's kind of hard to see it as a, you know, what's the next step? Look, and you could...
He's going to have to be there for 2 months. He's going to have to be in a kennel.
How long has he been in there now?
Well, 2 weeks, and he's already pulling the kennel apart. Because all he wants to do is get to you. All he wants to do is get to people.
Yeah, I'm not sure I've got a real easy answer for you.
But I
do think that it's just going to be a fairly difficult scenario. If I was bringing him into my backyard, I'd have a big fence between them. And a double fence, like with a foot of space down the middle. Right and off. Even that's going to create trauma.
Best of luck, Shane.
Sorry, Shane.
Yeah, best of luck, mate. I kind of sounds like you kind of need it. All right. A lot of thanks for everybody who's rang up for Pet Chat today. We've got about 30 seconds, gang. So we've got a dog of the cat of the week. The cat's gorgeous, Ellie. What about the dog, Luna Lou? Who wants to have a 30-second crack at that?
I think Luna Lou's photo says it all. And
very sort of, it's almost a sort of a glamour shot, isn't it?
Yeah, happy dog.
I hesitate to see your glamour shots, Mark, but
it's not bad for a dog.
She's happy.
I actually, from years ago, have shots of myself near the beach. Yeah,
but look at that. Luna Lou's at the bogey hole.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, the only thing I wanted to comment, because I had a read of this Australian Cattle Dog Cross, we've had a chat with a couple of people today, even about different breeds and how they, you know, need space and exercise. And Luna Lou has been a little bit nervous with others. So I think if someone's got the time, then could be okay. But it's always finding the right home for the right pet.
Always is. All right. You can check out our Dog and Cat of the Week in full at our website. Dr. David Tabard, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Cheryl Shaw, the pleasure is always ours.
Thank you.
Pet Chat back next week at the same time to a new RFM.